various magistracies that were arising as a result of African land disposition from the 1880s onward. This rapid African land disposition of the 1880s culminated in the signing of the General Act of the Conference of Berlin in 1885 by Britain, Germany, Belgium, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Portugal, and other lesser participants in the struggle for Africa. There were no Boers there, there were no Africans. It was the Western powers gathered together to divide Africa among themselves and to colonize it. That's why we are saying the challenge we are facing together is not an African Boer problem, it's an imperialist problem that was created in Berlin where the Boers were not represented. This act gave European powers the right to expropriate African land without compensation. In South Africa, the racist Union of South Africa institutionalized land disposition in terms of Act 27 of 1913 with the consent of the British imperial power. This act left the African majority with only 7% of the total surface of South Africa, which was increased to 13% in 1936, which means that 87% of the land went to the white minority and the majority was left with only 13%. And if this is not a gross injustice, as a doctor of law and a professor of law at Nelson Mandela University, I don't know what else is injustice. But I also need to say the following, because I want to emphasize one. And that one thing is that because the struggle was for a long time against apartheid, our young people who have not read history, they think that the so-called Boers or Afrikaners are the architects of the situation that we have. They have refined it, but they inherited it from a man called Cecil John Rhodes, the author of the British Imperialist Plan and the author of the British Secret Society. Sometimes when our youth break the statue of Cecil John Rhodes, we don't understand why they do that. Because some of us are too busy to read history. Listen to what the will of Cecil John Rhodes says. I leave all my worldly goods in trust for the establishment, promotion, and development of a secret society. The true aim and object thereof shall be the extension of the British rule throughout the world, the perfecting of a system of immigration from the United Kingdom and of colonization by British subjects of all lands where the means of livelihood are attainable by energy, labor, and enterprise, and especially the occupation by British settlers of the entire continent of Africa. He never said, I close the quote, he never said occupation by the Boers of Africa, by the British subjects. Cecil John Rhodes also appropriated the African belief in and worship of the Queen of Heaven, Mwari or Mwadiwedenga, also known as the Cosmic Mother, the Kore Kosmu, or the Great Sky Goddess Kore Mkuru, Borem Kuru, who manifested herself as the star of the underworld, Sabanya Daja, in Kiloveru, my mother tongue, and the Greek subject, popularly known as Queen Saba or Sheba. Cecil John Rhodes believed in this Sabian religion, and the legendary King Solomon's Mines and the biblical Ophir. He located Ophir, African Afura, here in southern Africa, especially Kimberley, Johannesburg, Zimbabwe. He sent a renowned archaeologist Possel to steal the bed of the Queen of Heaven, Shiri Yamuwari, or Muwadiwete, also known as the Ra bed, and placed it in his bedroom at his Kuroteski residence, and I'm informed it is still there. He prayed to the Queen of Queen Saba or Sheba, personified by this bed, before undertaking any major task to implement the British imperialist plan devised by the British Secret Society. Cecil John Rhodes had the ear of three generations of British royalty, from Queen Victoria to King George, who supported the creation of the British Secret Society, an imperialist plan, between the years 1873 to 1876. All this occurred in very humble surroundings in Kimberley. Here, Rhodes confessed to huge imperial ambitions in the following terms. I quote, "Gentlemen, I have asked you to dine because I want to tell you what I want to do with the remainder of my life. I think that if a man, while he is young, determines to devote his life to one worthy object and persists in that, he can do a great deal during that life, even if it is to be a short one, as I know my life will be. The object to which I intend to devote my life is the defense and extension of the British Empire. The British Empire stands for the protection of all the inhabitants of the country in life, liberty, fair play, and happiness, and is the greatest platform the world ever seen for these purposes. It is mainly the extension of the empire northward that we have to watch and work for in South Africa." So the imperialist plan was created here in South Africa with the resources from Kimberley, and therefore it is us here in South Africa who have inherited a great problem, and therefore together, both black and white, we must work together to find a solution. Cecil John Rhodes stole the diamonds here, not the Boers, in Kimber, to build the British Empire, and appointed Michel as his banker. Some years later, Cecil John Rhodes became the Prime Minister of the Cape Colony. He operated from this building. In 1891, Cecil John Rhodes met Nathan Rothschild at Rhodes Hotel at the Westminster Palace for the first of several confidential meetings with Rhodes. The two men discussed the British Secret Society and Rhodes' will and last testament. Consequently, in the very next will that Rhodes drew up, he added a condition entrusting the British Secret Society and its future protection to Rothschild. The Boers of Africa had no idea that Cecil John Rhodes had already begun a dream of an Africa which they would play no part whatsoever, unless, of course, they agreed to play a passive role. In Rhodes' scheme of things, if the Boer republics remained in Boer hands, there would be nothing but roadblocks on the British highway he was planning from the Cape to Cairo. the Boers fought against the British in the Second Anglo-Boer Wars. Africans supported the British because they thought the British were their friends. But at the end of both the First Anglo-Boer War and the Second Anglo-Boer War, both the Africans and the Boers were betrayed. It is against that background that in 1918 the father of Beyers Naudé founded the Bruder Bond, now called the Afrikaner Bond, to fight back against the British secret society. Now the apartheid system started by people who had lost wives and children in concentration camps because of a scheme that was created by Cecil John Rhodes. So we have inherited a problem. Both black and white who have a common destiny in this country. So I want to appeal to all of you that it will not assist us to point fingers at one another, because those fingers are not going to solve this problem, which was created by people who are sitting abroad. We call you here as the best brains that this country could produce, so that you can help this parliament to come with an amendment to the constitution, which amendment will ensure that justice is done to all the people of South Africa, both black and white, because we don't want a Somalia here, we don't want a Bosnia here, we don't want a Syria here. Mandela sacrificed 27 years on Robben Island because he wanted all of us, both black and white, to be free, and future generations to be free. Therefore, Honorable Mthethwa, I hope you will join me on the professors in saying, appealing to everybody to put aside our vested interests, because after all, in 100 years, none of us will be there. Only our children and great-grandchildren will be there. And we don't want them to be the victims of things that were done in this country when all of us were not even born. So we are grateful that you are all here in big numbers. And I want to repeat that as members of parliament, democratically elected, we don't have the monopoly of wisdom. And if we had the monopoly of wisdom, we would not have invited you. We have invited you because we want to learn from you. We want you to enrich this process, and this consultation is one of the first. There will be many others that will follow, and we want you to remain part of the process until we finalize this process at the end of March, because what comes out of this process must be a product that all South Africans, both black and white, are proud of, not a section of our people, because sectional interests are a panacea for disaster, as we have seen in other parts of the country. And as I said, we have appointed a distinguished scholar, a former judge, Professor Johan van den Westhuizen, because not because I don't trust my impartiality, but the lawyers say justice must be done and be seen to be done. And if I facilitate, people will say I facilitate with a hidden agenda. So I have no hidden agenda. I have one agenda. That agenda is the interest of the people of South Africa. And we also have a young woman advocate, Van der Merwe, who is going to do an input, a fine legal brain, and I can put my head on the rock that there's nothing that guides her except the interest of the people of South Africa. And in her input, you will see for yourself that we have people who have transcended the race classification and who only wants to put their talent at the disposal of the people of South Africa. And I want to thank you. That is in your hand, and I can assure you, unless you want to gossip, I'm not going to be meeting any gossip. The meeting is in your hand. You trust that you will steer the ship very well. Honorable Shivambo.
I want to think that can we locate the these discussions within the purpose of why this ad hoc committee was established? Because the resolution of Parliament established a committee, an ad hoc committee, to initiate and introduce legislation amending Section 25 of the Constitution. And I honestly wouldn't want us to traverse the same ground that was dealt with the condition of the new community and so many deliberations which Parliament has had. Because there are a lot of objectionable things, most of which you have said here, like the lopsided reading of history and wanting to exonerate the Boers from the brutality of barbaric apartheid. And it's the wrong basis foundation through which one would discuss this issue altogether in terms of how it's presented. I'm interested on what is the program towards the 20th of March which Parliament said is popular before the National Assembly on the rule that is going to amend Section 25 of the Constitution. But the process says that when we want to amend the Constitution, we should introduce a bill to the National Assembly. That is why the committee is called as the committee to initiate and introduce legislation. Our point is that of fundamental importance to deal with the bill. Well, because these issues, we know everyone's positions where they stand and everything as well, but that they don't so many things. But at some stage, we must table a bill to Parliament. And there are processes, there are areas that are elementary in terms of how a bill is introduced. We must conduct the machine, people can come and make submissions in the context of a bill to amend Section 25 of the Constitution. But I think that now we are taking a different direction altogether. We just want to give our own reading of the situation. That has been dealt with. Almost everyone else came to the Constitutional Review Committee to make submissions and we hear them. But ultimately there was a resolution of Parliament that we should amend Section 25 of the Constitution to make explicit that it was articulated in the current Constitution on expropriation of land with compensation. That is the minute that you have sent to us here in the document. That is what Parliament said we must do. We are not reinventing the wheel like here. If we want to do that, maybe we can constitute ourselves into a discussion forum elsewhere, including Johannesburg, but the end of the Monday now is to amend the Constitution. We should start the process of having the bill, and then we then discuss on the basis of the legislative framework to say that this is how Section 25 should. There are a lot of substantial issues that need to be looked into. I'm worried that the direction that we are almost embarking on now, we are going to meet the deadline of the 20th of March, which Parliament says we should submit a complete report. And you know, in terms of the legislative process, that we should have the public hearing for the bill and all sorts of submissions that should come. That this is how the Constitution should the right to achieve what Parliament majority has agreed should be. I'm leaving here with joy and thought that we should know when do we introduce, when do we have the first draft of the bill, when are we having the public hearings, when are we finalizing, and whether we are still on track to table the bill for adoption by Parliament on the 20th of March. So that we do not cause a lot of things, because if we do that, we all of us do what we're doing there of an extremely lopsided and biased reading of colonial history. We know colonialism is in part of South Africa, but both English and African are part of the problem. It's not either or, and we must have to accept that reality. It's not either or in terms of both situations.
Before I unconditionally hand over, let me say that history is subject to interpretation, and every human being has the right to interpret the facts as they see them, and therefore I am not going to contest if anyone interprets history different from me, but I presented history as I have read it, and now I also am mindful of the fact that here we are guided by a resolution of Parliament, and that's why we have brought a well-qualified advocate to take us through the process and the time frame, and I have repeatedly said we are committed to finish the process on time, and we are going to finish that process on time, but Judge, let me allow Honorable Lesuma to say something before you proceed, because otherwise if I continue to allow people to speak, I may be usurping your power, and I don't want to do that. Lesuma, you will be the last person, and then the judge will take over. Honorable Nanda, Nesuma Nanda. Okay, I'm withdrawing from the scene, otherwise, from the scene, not the scene, from the scene. I'm handing over to Judge from the first place.
Thank you, Chair. I think the reason why I'm here is because to bring in some kind of neutrality and objectivity. My first request to you is, may I take off my jacket in case this chair becomes hotter than it already is here, if you don't mind that. Yes, as far as history is concerned, I don't think Dr. Wojciech and I met because we both hated the British Empire. My hatred for the British Empire is mostly aimed at their cricket and soccer and rugby teams, and therefore I feel very good at the moment over the past few days, because I think Little John Rhodes, I hope that he has a flat screen TV if it's not too hot where he is at the moment. What I will do after a few words to introduce is exactly what Honorable Chimango proposed now, and that is, let us make an agenda for today. But I assume that if we are at the moment between past numbers 2 and 3 on the agenda, that the presentation by Constitutional and Legal Services, that I understand is Edward Panamera. We are not related. All white people might look the same, but they don't all have the same name. Some are Panamera and some are Panavista. So I've never met her before. I suppose some of the answers that we are looking for, and that I'm looking for myself, to understand what we are doing here today, may come from her presentation. What I ask you to think about in the meantime is then, how are we going to spend our time here after her presentation? I will give an opportunity then that we identify topics, and that in that process we also decide about time. Not only the timeline up to March, but just simply also the time for today. As to March, I am tempted to say that I will rather die in a ditch than the bill not be passed. But we have seen on television that politicians and others who make these promises don't always keep their promises to die in ditches. So I have no control over the parliamentary agenda, but I need to understand it myself in order to chair it properly. But a few words, you've gone past this, but what the chair complimented me with all kinds of things that perhaps are exaggerated, but the two things that may help me and may help me to understand you is, I was very intimately involved in the drafting of the Constitution. I was on the panel of experts assisting the Constitutional Assembly. I was specifically involved in the Bill of Rights chapter. I was not a land expert on Section 25, and I still am not, but I do have some very vivid memories. That might be irrelevant, but I could tell you some of those things if there is time and if you are interested. Secondly, of course, I was a judge in the Constitutional Court for 12 years, and we have had some cases where Section 25, as it stands, was interpreted. We could come back to that. Speaking of the Constitution, and we've been talking here about colonialism and whose fault it is and so on, I don't think it is necessary at all today to dwell on that. You know, in academic circles, young radical academics, some students call themselves constitutional abolitionists. They deny the legitimacy of the entire Constitution. And one of the arguments is that the Constitution is the result of violent colonial conquest. And I've made myself unpopular in certain circles by saying that this is obviously true. Nobody can deny that colonial conquest took place and there was violence involved, a lot of it. The question is, what now? What do we do with it? Because simply in terms of causation, my very existence is also the result of violent colonial conquest. Not only would I have not existed in this country, but I have Fanamervas and the Fanamervas and others would not have existed at all if people from wherever in Europe, the Netherlands, Belgium, etc., did not meet here in South Africa. So the question for myself, and that I've been asking myself over the past many years, is, what can I do now? Now that I do it, this, whatever it is that caused my existence, who knows, even the direct act of procreation might have been an accident in the case of many of us. But that is not what one has to deal with. What you have to think about is, what can you contribute and how can you go forward? the good and the bad news, I don't know which one is good and which one is bad. The chair said we have open minds. I can certainly tell you that my mind is very open, but I can also tell you that whatever is on my mind is irrelevant for your purposes. I don't see myself here as an expert. I see myself as somebody who more or less understands some of the issues and who would like to try to help that we have a proper discussion. You know, we can deconstruct many things about courts, but I think the one good thing about a court is that people take turns to speak and that they listen, or they, at least they pretend to listen while others speak, and that one doesn't speak over each other and shut each other down, etc. So what I would like to ask you before I go to the next item is, when you speak later on, identify yourself. As far as I understand from the chair, it's not only members of parliament who like to speak here, but anybody who wants to contribute. We will not turn it into a media conference. In other words, ask questions and so on. Now that the Springbok won, the amendment of the constitution should be a lot easier, or anything like that. we are not going to take questions of that kind, but I think everybody should be able to speak. That is what I've been told. And I would like you to identify yourself. Some of you are better known on television than others. Some wear brighter colored outfits than others, so they are more easily recognizable. Some I've seen many other committees. But I will try my best as a former constitutional court judge. For the past few years, I've been the inspecting judge of correctional services to conduct this. But before I ask Advocate Sanna Merwe, therefore, please think, because as soon as she's finished, I'm going to ask exactly for what Honorable Shivamba was mentioning, namely, what are we here for? You must tell me what you think we are here for. We will spend some time on that. Then we'll make a list of topics. We will try to allocate time. I don't know how much time we have. So let us, as we get the information from the Constitutional and Legal Services Office, as we get that information, let's try to think what we would like to make out of today. So can I ask that with kind of out of today to make your input? Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone here. I think just maybe to, it's not part of the presentation that was handed to you, but seeing that the question was raised, if I can maybe just quickly put out for everyone our program and trying to achieve the 31 May deadline. After this workshop next week, there will be discussions by the committee on the themes that come out of this workshop. Then there will be a week, that week itself, and then another week given to actually come up to the drafters, and that will be myself and Ms. Hallie Starkey sitting next to me. We have been honored with this task to assist the committee on the development of the bill. We will then be presenting a bill to this committee on the 27th of November of this year. Thereafter, there will be deliberations by this committee, and we have made provision for a number of meetings where these deliberations can take place, with the aim then to finalize and adopt a bill for publication. In other words, not the final bill. There can still be changes, but this is a bill that will be published, and we will be calling for comments from the public. These calls for comments will take place on two occasions. The first one will be in December, and the reason for having in December firstly is because there are other institutions that have to be involved. The provincial legislatures have to be invited, and also the National House of Traditional Leaders. So in order to give them an opportunity to set their calendar and their program for January, we want to be able to give them a formal document in December. Then there will also be a call for comments from the public early in January. In fact, I think the date that we had was 6th January. So then there will be a period of at least 3 weeks for members of the public to comment. But please keep in mind that this bill will already be available from mid-December. So there's a long time for the public, but we also do acknowledge the festive season, and that no one wants to cracking heads over this subject, maybe over the festive season where we want to rest. But after that, then in February, there will be public hearings where the committee members will then consult members of the public on their submission, of course focusing on the content of the bill. Thereafter, there will be, at the end of February, a presentation to the committee. We both from the content advisors, they will speak to content, and if there are legal issues, myself and Ms. Aristotle will be addressing those and advising the committee, for the committee then in March to be able to deliberate on the bill. And then we envisage that on the 20th of March that the committee will finalize and adopt a bill. That bill will then be tabled with the House for introduction, so that we have our final report tabled with the House by the 31st of March. So yes, the program so far is definitely still on track, and I think that kind of sets out the legislative process as well for members to consider. So thank you for giving me that opportunity. If I then can start with the presentation itself, I thought to start with something that I think we all feel relatively comfortable with, but that we also understand has to be changed to some extent. So I'm not going to read it out. There have been some printouts made. If you do not have a copy of Section 25, there are printouts available. But like I say, I've included it in the presentation, then we all know exactly what it is that we're talking about, Section 25. Now, the chairperson gave us some background, but I would like to add and just maybe crystallize what has happened so far. In the first parliament, the Constitutional Review Committee started off, it was actually mandated by both houses. It wasn't just something that happened by itself, that both houses mandated the Constitutional Review Committee to actually review Section 25. And the express instruction was to consider Section 25 as well as other clauses of the Constitution and see what would be necessary to make it possible for the state to expropriate land in the public interest without compensation and to propose the necessary constitutional amendments where necessary. Now, the Constitutional Review Committee held a number of consultation processes that went all over the country to speak to the people, to understand the varying views. And I will also speak to those views a little bit later in the presentation. The committee in the end, on the 15th of November 2018, made a recommendation that Section 25 must be amended to make explicit what is implicit, thereby acknowledging all of these. So the House then, maybe just for those who don't understand the parliamentary process, the Constitutional Review Committee, because it is a joint committee, does not have the power in terms of the Constitution to introduce legislation. It is only committee or members of parliament, and therefore ministers, of course, introducing executive bills that are allowed by the Constitution to introduce legislation. So the National Assembly then had to establish a committee, and the ad hoc committee on the amendment of Section 25 was in fact established. This is not a first parliament, so we don't get confused. We should remind us. On the 6th of December 2018, we need to keep in mind that the first parliament was coming to an end in April of 2019 because of the election. So that ad hoc committee had a number of consultations. They spoke with a number of experts. They obtained a number of views. But there was insufficient time to actually develop a bill and process a bill. Then, what happened on the 15th of March, that committee filed a report indicating to the House that they were unable to complete the process, and that committee recommended that the matter must rather be proceeded with in the 6th Parliament. And that resolution was then adopted by the National Assembly. And that brings us then to the 6th Parliament, the current Parliament. Now, on the 25th of July 2019, the ad hoc committee was in fact established, and there was a couple of instructions given by the National Assembly. the committee was required to initiate and introduce legislation that would amend Section 25, and had to consider the Constitutional Review Committee's report as well as the report of the Fifth Parliament Ad Hoc Committee. So that is where we where we're at the moment. This is the committee that was established. And if we look at the mandate, and I think that was already mentioned today, the mandate of this committee, that arises from the actual resolution of the House. And I'm not going to read it out. If you have the slides, you will see where it is. Because I think the more important aspect is if we then kind of dissect it a bit, that resolution, and we look at what the policy statement is that will inform the bill. The policy statement is, number one, that Section 25 must be amended. And secondly, that it must be amended so that it makes explicit that which is implicit in the Constitution, namely that expropriation of land without compensation is a legitimate option for land reform. And that is the mandate that we're working with. And that is what the bill must look at. So the consultations that we're starting with, the committee is starting with this workshop. It is in fact, just in case anyone had concerns, the Ad Hoc Committee was given all the powers that National Assembly Rule 167 gives it. And that includes to hold public hearings, to receive submissions, to permit all evidence, etc. So absolutely this committee is empowered to consult with the public. And in fact that is what it's doing here today. It is starting off the process, because any legislative process starts off with a policy that informs the bill. And although we have the mandate, it is quite clear, there's a number of things that this committee can then ask the public and say, well, can you assist us? Because this is not just our bill, this bill will belong to the public. I think the chair already mentioned that it's the process of nation building. Everyone must be a part of this bill. Once this bill is passed by the two houses, the nation needs to feel that it's their bill and that they can support its implementation. So we acknowledge that there are differing views on how this amendment should be effected. But it's very important to Parliament that all these views are in fact aired. And then when drafting the bill, all of these views will be considered. And therefore, this workshop is a very important part of the drafting process. So, if I may then speak about the views that we are aware of on amending Section 25, the first view is that Subsection 3 already deals with just and equitable compensation and therefore allows for flexibility when compensation is determined. That means that you do not have to have compensation that is market related and could be zero. That is true. But if we look at the mandate of the committee, and if we consider, I've gone through the process, if we consider what the Constitutional Review Committee did, that whole consultation process, listening to everyone, and they recommended that what is implicit must be made explicit. We're talking here about a mandate that is telling us we need to change the perception that is associated with Section 25. It needs to be explicit that expropriation can happen without compensation. So that is why we are here today, even though there is a view that the Constitution currently allows for it. When we look at the high-level panel who considers the impact of legislation, the main, if I just look at land reform, I mean that report is quite broad, but just focusing on land reform, the high-level panel indicated that there must be more than one law that will regulate land reform. And they made a number of proposals. For instance, there's also some new acts that are proposing, a Land Records Act. Traditional courts will also be effective there. And they will then also talking about amendments to the Labor Tenants Act, Extension of Security of Tenure Act. Now, this whole suite of laws, while it is true that we need law, the Constitution is our framework and it enables Parliament to make law. So it is very important that Section 25 allows that suite of laws to be enacted in a way that makes them effective. the next view is looking at section 25(2). The views will see it mentioned subsection 1 as well. Subsection 1, however, deals with deprivation, and compensation is not something that is mentioned in relation to deprivation. It's a different concept, although it also deals with taking away rights. But what this committee will be focusing on is expropriation, and that is where compensation comes into play. So when we look at section 25, you will see that there are some strong views that came from the Constitutional Review Committee, the consultations, in fact. One of them was that the whole of the section is an impediment to expropriation of land without compensation, and that your subsections 2 and 3 are actually legitimizing illegitimate rights, and that even though subsection 4 allows us to look at what public interest is and that it includes land reform, you need to find a way to balance the two. So this is the view that actually says that the way we read section 25 doesn't show us that you can in fact go the distance with this clause. So if we look at the next slide, there's a couple of possible amendments that could afford this balance. The one would be to actually amend subsections 2b and subsection 3 of section 25. So if we say that even if we're talking about compensation, we make it clear, and that's provided, and provided is actually something that we drafters are told to be very careful with, because you amend whatever goes before it. So that provided there is saying you're amending this phrase subject to compensation by saying that a court may determine that no compensation is payable in the event of expropriation of land for the purposes of land reform. And then subsection 3 is actually just a consequential amendment. Another option would be to insert a whole new subsection. Now, also just on interpretation of laws, you need to always read the section as a whole. So inserting a new subsection would indicate that you are actually putting some proviso there in relation to subsections 2, 3, and 4, to say that notwithstanding, and again, that's again a thing that we are warned against as drafters, because that word, notwithstanding, means that we're amending. So we are saying notwithstanding, whatever you've seen in 2, 3, and 4, those requirements, you may actually, for the purpose of achieving land reform, in order to address the result of past racial discrimination, be expropriated without the payment of any compensation. So those are some options that we can look at in respect of addressing your land reform in subsection 4 versus subsections 2 and 3's protectionist view. Then the presidential panel also made some proposals, and what they proposed was that you could insert a new section that provides for enabling legislation. In other words, something to say national legislation must set out the circumstances under which property may be expropriated without the payment of compensation. This is maybe not necessary for the workshop itself, but when we advise the committee, I would not advise the committee that this is the only clause that is inserted. I would combine this with one of the two previous options, simply because I think the mandate of the committee is to make explicit what is implicit, and I think there needs to be a statement in order to give effect to that mandate. So when we discussed with the chairperson what would be the purpose of this workshop, his instruction to us was that we need to look at the how. We know now, there's been consultations, and the consultations of the Constitutional Review Committee might have been a separate process from that of the Ad Hoc Committee, but it is still Parliament's process. We have gone through that process. We have debated on whether there should be an amendment or not, and the decision was that there should be an amendment. So we've gone through that aspect. The question that is before the committee, the Ad Hoc Committee, is how to do it. How do we make this change? What would be the best wording? What would be the best placing? And so on. So from that aspect, that is then where we have put these possible views before the public, before the members. Of course, there might be other options. There might be other solutions. And that is then what we are definitely looking for. And that brings me to the end. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. But before we go any further, I need an indication either from the gentleman next to me or from the audience as to our time. How long are we here for? Half day, full day, 2 days? It's almost Wednesday time, etc. Can I just have an indication of that? That will help us to decide what is physically possible to achieve. 1 day, so there will be tea time or only lunch? Lunch and then back after lunch? Are you going to have people back after lunch, depending on how angry they make each other, maybe, yeah. Okay, what I would propose then right now is that you ask, use a few minutes simply to ask technical questions, if I can call it that way, to Ms. van der Merwe. In other words, not argue about the merits, we will deal with the options. But simply, is it understood what the program is going to be between now and April? Yes. Please identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Matumi Chidi from Chidiya Selling. I'm invited in my private capacity. I think Justice can assist us in this process. You spoke about judgments that have been made, mainly the Constitutional Court on Section 45. It's FNB, Hudson, reflect all and others, but they've been on Subsection 1, which is declaration. And the judgments have verified a constitutional position. That in the case of declaration, there's no need for payment of compensation. And if you look at the text, Subsection 1, compensation is not mentioned. So you should be clear that the focus is subsection 2, which if it applies, then the determination is in terms of subsection 3 or section 25. That should be the clarity of thought we have as we go about this process. Now my suggestion would then be, and it talks to the issue of how long we should be here, what to wait for. My suggestion would be, if you look at subsection 2, it's not a long sentence. And that is the one, say, subject to compensation, the amount, the payment, and determination by the court. It's not a very long section. Then when it comes to subsection 3, it only ticks into the event there's need for compensation to be paid. So now, what I would propose is that we may not have the wisdom for purpose of our sitting today to have a thorough discussion of a constitutional amendment if we don't have a draft as a proposal of what may be the text of the constitution. So the step would be, as I propose, that there be a draft, a proposed draft, and obviously it can be today. Then we got the members' contact and those of us who are not members, circulate it amongst us, and say this is what is proposed as the text. And then we then take it up from that point of view. Then that would then mean that we may not take much time today in the proceedings. And what we can do with the problem is that on the 27th of November, there should be a submission of a draft to the committee. So what if we could agree on the time within which the drafts may take place and input from members and non-members before the 27th. We can work around the 20th or so. So that's my proposal, that let's have a draft, but as we draft the proposed amendment, we'll be clear that we're talking about main subsection 2 as well as subsection 3 of the Constitution.
Thank you very much for the input, and we will keep it in mind. But I said that we will allow for a few minutes for questions to Ms. van der Merwe, but only questions on clarity, not debating any of the options for now. We will come back to the debate. Is there any question as to, with regard to these timelines, etc., that she spoke about? The technicalities, not the different options. We will get to that. Now, if there's no question on that, then yes, you have to identify yourself, even though
yes. Where did they consider?
Mr. Duvalu, please, just for the record.
Yeah, but you already identified me. What is the difference of make coming from? Because you're saying the first of May, where does it come from?
What come from? Sorry, I can't hear.
I said the first of May, you mentioned something like that.
Sorry, first
of May. The key date of this process.
No, I think they said March, but please understand. Please explain.
Thank you. No, the 31st of March is the deadline for the report. So in other words, members will be deliberating on the final bill and then coming up with the final document during February and March, and then it will be introduced before the end of 31st March. If I didn't say May, I do apologize. It was definitely March.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Paul Van Older. I'm a student of the class and a Catholic committee. I think the timescales are quite clear. They were discussed in the committee at our previous meeting and agreed by the supervisory committee. And technically correct, the state mentioned was 31st of March. So I would like to ask just for clarity is that section 65 of the Constitution deals with property. Some recitation is 55 between property and land.
Parliament refers only to land. Understand you correctly that if you talk about declaration, you're only talking about land and not property in general. Can I have a debate lightly if it's necessary, but what is your understanding
from
at this stage?
Thank you. The mandate of this committee is in fact land. So if we look at the policy that arises, is that expropriation of land without compensation is a legitimate option for land reform.
So any amendment would have to then separate land from the property concept in general, because as you would have seen from court decisions, also property, not only in this country, but in others like Germany, can have a very wide meaning. Intellectual property, rights still to come into existence, etc. So we are talking mainly land, is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is correct. In fact, if the committee would decide for a broader, I would recommend that we will need to request the House to approve a broader mandate.
Can I just ask for clarity from my side with regard to the mandate? The 15th of November, I think you said, you called it, in your presentation, you called it a recommendation. The fact that the Constitution, you said there is a view that the Constitution does not have to be amended, everything is achievable, but there was a recommendation then that it should rather be amended to make it clear. Is that no going back on that one? I'm not asking because I have any preferences, I'm simply asking to narrow the way forward as to what we should be doing.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. If we look at the mandate of the committee again, and I keep coming back to this, the history of the matter was that decision, that discussion on whether there should be an amendment or not, was dealt with by the Constitutional Review Committee in the Fifth Parliament. They then recommended that Section 25 must be amended. That recommendation was adopted by the House, and when the House established the Arrow Committee in the Fifth Parliament and again in the Sixth Parliament, the mandate was clear that Section 25 must be amended.
Okay, thank you. Then we have clarity on that. Let me just, we're still busy with questions,
yes,
for clarification,
right,
before we look at these. Yes?
Very true. My name is Vilma Shah. I'm the president. I just would really request you, Chair Judge, that you allow a space to discuss the issue of property in the CNN. I don't think, you know, some of us are comfortable with the suggestion and presentation.
I will certainly allow space for anybody who wants space. Right now, I'm still trying to only get questions for clarification on the presentation made. Then we will identify the themes we're going to talk about. Yes. So, your name?
No, I want to speak on the theme, so I'll hold my input until it gets
it.
My name is Alina Petitsi, and I just have a question on parliamentary rules. The mandate that established the committee, is the committee bound by that mandate, or is the committee, do they have powers to go back to the National Assembly and say that they could not fulfill the mandate because after certain presentations made, they've come to the conclusion that it's not necessary, the mandate? I don't know if, okay.
Just in terms of the rule, political and other preferences.
Thank you. The committee is a extension of the House, and the committee is therefore limited by the instructions of the House. And in fact, in the past committee meetings, it has been made very clear that the committee is aiming to achieve the 31 March deadline. Should anything happen that makes it very difficult for the committee may approach the House. It does not mean that the House will give any extension, and that is why this committee is doing its best to achieve the mandate given by the House. So yes, they may go back, not to say that an extension will be given, and I don't think that is something that the committee wants to operate with, in the sense of hoping that they might get an extension. They want to try and achieve what the House sets before them.
Okay, I will allow three more, and then that's it for now, for the clarification. Everything you mentioned can be debated as a topic in any event. So, yes, sir. I'll go there, then Dr. Mulder, then Mr. Schumacher.
I'm Benny Pantel from PLU South Africa. And Chair, I just want to clarify the process within the Fifth Parliament and all the proposals they get regarding this whole issue. Is that from the table? So we start over again with the Sixth Parliament, or are those proposals and submissions still on the table, and are this committee also looking to that issue, or are we going to do it over again?
Quick answer.
The mandate required the Sixth Parliament Ad Hoc Committee to consider the report of the work done by the Fifth Parliament. So the work does not have to be redone. It is something that the committee will consider, that report of the Ad Hoc Committee. We must, however, be very clear that the Ad Hoc Committee must limit itself to its mandate. So that's a very important thing just to keep in mind. However, like I said, the report of the Fifth Parliament Committee, as well as of the Constitutional Review Committee, is something that an Ad Hoc Committee must consider.
Just in response to the previous question regarding if the mandate comes from the House, I never referred to the contract, but I understand the rule technically correct, that technically the committee could approach the House to amend the mandate as well, and the House will decide whether they want to do that or not. Play with the distinction or not.
Perhaps I'm too robust or too naive, but are we talking here, the last two questions, about the possibility to still consider that no amendment is necessary at all? Is that what we're talking about here, or is that not what's behind the questions? The last two questions.
Of course, we're not talking about the context, we're talking about process. I want to ask, technically speaking, the House gave the mandate, the House set the deadline, but the House also capable of changing or extending the deadline, and the House is capable of amending the mandate. So if the committee, for whatever reason, would like to go back to the House and either ask an extension or a change in the mandate or something, technically the House can take that decision. The House is giving that.
I'm asking the question, although we're talking process now, is which topics to allow for discussion. And it won't help to discuss something which is not discussable at all. But if even if it's a theoretical and technical possibility, then I suppose one people must say what they want to say. Yes, Mr. Shivam.
You know, the parliamentary process in the field has exhausted the question of whether Section 25 can be amended or not. And the Parliament adopted a policy that the Constitution Section 25 must be amended. And because it's a constitutional obligation and process, we as the Ad Hoc Committee of the National Assembly are going to initiate a bill to amend the Constitution to make it explicit that expropriation is permissible without compensation. That is what was given. And it would be a waste of time to be present in the same ground that was processed. If we're going to listen to people coming in, you know, you know, you should appropriate that compensation. That was dealt, like, we can't debate forever. We have to at some stage conclude on this issue. And if people want to challenge it, they'll challenge it, whatever platform, they can contest elections or do whatever they want to do about it.
And then, to close this part, we can come back on every issue if necessary, but can you just tell us again how many options do you have at this stage? And get it on screen again for us.
Two and eight.
You're not talking for now, in terms of your presentation, we're not talking about all the potential in the clause as it is without amendment. You're talking about different ways of amending, some more radical, more drastic than others.
Yeah, I almost think all of them are as radical as the other. But yes, the options are to actually have something within the clause that we are concerned about. So this is option one. Option two would be to have something that is separate. So insert a new clause.
And not the standing clause, yes. Okay, so one is for a judge who is slow, because advocates have to explain, that is we would basically with 2B and the 3, and we amend the words there. Option 2 is a whole new subsection, and notwithstanding the rest. Is that combined with 1 or not? That is if 1 happens or if 1 does not happen.
These are two separate options.
Yes.
So option one would be to amend it within the current
text. Option two would be to amend it as it is, but to put in a notwithstanding. Yes.
Yes. And
yes.
Then from the presidential panel's recommendation, there's something to specifically state that there's a requirement for enabling legislation that will determine criteria, which we know is already on the way of the expropriation bill that's being developed. But like I said, this clause, my recommendation would be that it goes, if we decide to put something in like that, that it goes with either option one or option two.
So that is not really a third option, it is an additional possibility, like we have in the Constitution with regard to labor, with regard to PAJA, the administrative, where the Constitution itself then says there must be other legislation. In other words, that one could be combined with any of the first two, but the option there would be to say something which would pass the ball, seeing that we are talking about balls being passed these days, to the legislature again to make another piece of legislation. All right, what I would like to ask, I will give a chance now for Ingrid. Can we accept simply to steer our discussions that we look at the options and comment on the options, but if you have any other option or anything much more radical or much less radical, then you are welcome to put that onto the agenda for well. For example, I think, speaking just for myself, I have not been intimately part of this debate, many people, yes, especially academics, say that it does not have to be amended at all. That it was a lack of political will and whatever else that prevented it from operating, that just an equitable compensation can be zero compensation. As a past judge, I have a bit of a doubt there as to any court will say zero is also compensation. But anyway, I suppose that is theoretically a possibility. And what I've seen in informal discussions and class discussions with students, it is not only, it seems to me, and I think you hinted in that direction, it is not only about the specific A, B, and C in whichever words. There is a symbolic dimension to this. And that may be tied to the fact that the property clause is the one on which many people focus to regard the original constitution-making process as too much of a compromise or perhaps a sellout or whatever. So it seems to me sometimes my impression from speaking to students has been that even if you write exactly the same things in a different way, and it seemed to come out of this parliament and this process. It may have some symbolic value, even if the legal consequences are not necessarily that all that different. Yeah. And that, I think, is a political reality, but once again, it is not for me to express myself. So, shall we then say, for you can, anybody can say anything, but let us try to focus on the three options, I mean the two options plus the extra possibility, and anything else which you regard as not good enough, not sufficient in those options. I will come back to you again. Yes, sir, you. Yes.
I'm Dave Stewart of the F.W. de Klerk Foundation and the Center for Constitutional Rights. Does our presence here imply that we somehow or other accept the need and desirability to amend Section 25 in the first place? Are we here just to discuss the manner in which the section should be amended or may be amended, or is there a place here in this consultation for organizations and people who are implacably opposed to the amendment of Section 25 in the first place?
Well, speaking for myself, my two chairs here can help. I think anybody is welcome. I don't think your presence implies that you sign away any rights that you might have, that you give up any options that you may wish to propose. The question is how to best use our time for this particular purpose. I don't know what other opportunities there may be, but I don't think anybody here should be worried that by being present they commit to something which they don't agree with. Am I correct there?
The desirability or otherwise to amend was dealt with during the fifth parliament. Now we are past that stage. The report was presented to parliament. Parliament said it is desirable to amend, and it appointed this ad hoc committee to work on the amendment. So we are not going to go back. We are moving forward because, as other advocate from the Bernardo correctly said, we are an extension of Parliament. We cannot change the mandate of Parliament. Parliament mandated us to work on the amendment, and that's what this process is all about.
My name is Crosby. I am the head of land affairs at AgriSA. And I'm going to share my dilemma with you now, because I have a dilemma because of where the debate is going. Whilst it's always an honour to be invited to Parliament, and we very much appreciate the invitation was an open-ended one. It wasn't clear to us, being invited here, that the focus would only be on what is the wording going to be going forward now. And whilst we understand that, you know, the political parties here, you know, you and the ad hoc committee in particular is guided by a resolution, we as an outside party are not bound by that same resolution. And my only mandate at this point in time from AgriSA is still that we are against any amendment of Section 25, because from where we stand, we see the only reason for such an amendment as basically a political one, which we don't think is going to solve the problem that we're trying to address. And we don't think it's good for the country. So if we're not going to be given any opportunity, that presents me with a dilemma being here, because I will be limited in my participation, and I just want to be open about that.
Thank you. We'll come back on that. Yes,
Chair, when you called for help, you were looking for options on what is the best way for the best way of, because there are two options that were presented. I want to speak to options, because that is what we are primarily here to do. the rest of the other things we have listened to before. We can't listen for a moment. Take the decision. My proposal is that...
But can I just interrupt you there just before? I don't want people to leave and feel unwelcome or whatever. I cannot determine what the mandate of this committee is. I'm here to facilitate a discussion. Therefore, I, chairing it, has to weigh against each other the reason that I'm told, and against why we are here. But I have to, of course, also weigh against the concept of freedom of expression within our wider political debate. So as a way to accommodate all and not to leave anybody, let us focus on the options for a start. And let us then see if there is time and we get to a point where one is free to say, none of these options is going to work. I want a much more radical one. I want to abolish the entire Bill of Rights, or I want to do whatever, or I don't think there is no amendment necessary. So I will make space for that. But let us for now focus on the narrower mandate of what we are here for, and that is the options presented, additional options, problems with the options, any other ideas. But because let us use the work that has been done. I think even those of us, those of you who are against any amendment may learn something and may even find something that supports your views by looking at what is. I don't think one should have an attitude, I'm only here to say one thing and otherwise I leave. We can all learn something from one another. Thank you.
I was presenting the options. Also, you must appreciate that leaving as well is a form of participation. People can leave. That is called participation as well, to say that I didn't continue. It's a democratic right to be able to...
But leave that now. Talk about the options. Talk about the options and everybody else can talk about what they want.
Article 25 2 proposed that it must be a property may be expropriated without compensation and only in law of general application. I'm not looking at the basis of those two options. I'm presenting a new option.
Right, so that's a new option in addition to those, or that you want to put on the table?
Yes, property may be expropriated, may be expropriated without compensation, and only in law, in terms of law, general application. And then the aim remains for a public purpose or in a public interest. And automatically, that of the current constitution must fall because it's subject to compensation. And everything else that tells compensation or the conditionality for compensation fall off. And obviously, Section 7 as well that speaks to 1913 Land Act as well should fall off in terms of the entire section on property in the constitution. That is a solid recommendation. What we can do to assist you is to give you the entire written submission in terms of how the whole property clause should be, look like after the amendment has been passed.
What can we do to have your proposal visible in writing for us?
So we can process that now. We can get the application to you.
Yeah, perhaps. Do you want a tea time or shall we go on until lunch, or is there a tea time in between us? I don't know what your process is. Yeah. Right, let's take a 15-minute break. People can get some drinks. You can, as far as I understand, even bring it back here. For now. Yeah. Okay, but we will start talking again in 15 minutes. Also, you can see if you can make available your proposal, it will help us a lot.
I don't know. So from what I...